Greetings. Welcome. Bienvenidos. Hola. Aloha. Wei ni hao. Namaste. Konnichiwa. Bonjour. Guten Tag. Salam. Shalom. Peace. It's the planet's first and only commercial vegan radio show on Independence Day. Happy 4th of July to you. Congratulating the sovereign nation of Arachnam on its new independence, on its sovereignty. Congratulations, Arachnam, on your new democracy. Well, we now share so much in common. Well, neither of us has an elected government. And in Arachnam right now, well, this past week, the courts have become clogged with the trial of a former brutal dictator. And over here, our courts are clogged, with the trial of in Orange County of a mother of two. Orange County mother of two, with her six-month trial now, sixth court appearance for Julie Mescal for handing out flyers at the rodeo in the city of Industry. So when Arachnam is done with its major court trial, it's maybe its second case there, we'll be, get the animal rights people, So we share so much in common, huh? Our governmentment, and yes, that's whom we will trust to monitor and protect us from mad cow disease, 100% fatal in its human form after you eat infected meat, steak, burger, have it your way, whatever you want. Still deadly, and you think grilling that burger on the barbecue is going to kill the mad cow disease? Sorry. So sorry has been our treatment of the gentle cow that, with raping her to death so that you can steal her milk intended for her baby, so that you can sip nature's most perfect food for a four-hooved, four-stomached, horned creature. So she suffers a few years hooked up to a painful milk-sucking machine, sucking calcium out of her till she can hardly walk to make it to slaughter, to have her leg hoisted in the air, chained to the disassembly line, and she gets slashed and skinned and dismembered, very likely conscious and feeling, and finally, well, now the cow is mad. And as we talked about it a few weeks back, starting June 1st with the new testing procedures, new mad cow testing procedures are starting to yield more and more of what are called inconclusive results. And those samples are then sent to the Governmentment's central mad cow testing facilities in Ames, Iowa, for further testing. Please remember the state of your governmentment and its so-called intelligence, huh? Death to Americans? Death to Americans? The CIA intercepted that message and thought it was an Al-Qaeda threat, but it was just another business proposal to use their Unical money and start up a chain of slashed food restaurants. Death to Americans described the menu items, imitative of those foods, found at McDevil's and Murder King and Wendy's and Kills Jr. and K-Killing F4 C-Cash. Death to Americans. It's what's on the grill for the 4th of July. Perhaps you, as part of that cult of corpse eaters, are standing around the grill now, making your 4th of July pledge. Yeah. I pledge disease-ence from meat's labs of the United States of Listeria. And to the repugnant sandwiches stands. Heart operation under ketchup with E. coli and cancer for all. VJ's laughing in the background, our animal rights friend. We carpooled today. He has dog walking to do. I have to come down to the station. So we carpooled and he can't contain himself. Oh, well, it's the 4th of July. A great day to declare your independence from barf. I mean, beef. When you grill that fecal burger today, and you know about E. coli, that's from fecal contamination. So when you scab your fecal burger flesh on your grill to perfection today, well, perhaps we should think about what you're actually doing. to that fecal burger, and you have the doctors at the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. They're saying that you really have to watch out because when Americans, well, when you barbecue, you have the hazard there of flame-broiled meat, which includes the formation of carcinogens called heterocyclic amines from overcooking, or you have deadly bacteria from undercooking, and there are many healthful and great-tasting alternatives. Veggie burgers, not dogs, you know, grilled polenta, vegetable brochettes, and other favorites. In fact, they had some recommendations for what a nice menu might be for the 4th of July to have some nutritional food on the grill there, and they're talking about avoiding those carcinogens. So you can avoid the carcinogens that are formed when animal protein is heated up on the barbecue by grilling vegetables, tempeh, or other plant foods instead. By doing so, you'll reduce your risk of several types of cancer, including non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, breast and colon cancer. And for a meaty flavor without the saturated fat and cholesterol, you can try dressing bite-sized pieces of button or other mushrooms in a ginger teriyaki sauce, wrapping them in a foil package, then cooking them on the grill for about 10 minutes. Update your potato or macaroni salad by preparing it with a vinaigrette or an egg-free mayonnaise like Veginaise. That would make total sense. Skip the deviled eggs. Instead, serve tasty dips such as guacamole and salsa, hummus with fresh-cut vegetables, and baked tortilla chips. Baked beans are a hearty and delicious addition to a barbecue menu. Buy vegetarian beans without the lard or the pork fat, and add lower-fat veggie hot dogs if you want Frank's and beans. And keep your family and guests safe from foodborne illness by avoiding all meats and eggs. Barbecued chicken, potato salad, and other foods containing animal products left on the picnic table in the sun for several hours are responsible for thousands of cases of foodborne illness every summer. And if you have any doubt of the presence of the human form of mad cow in these United States, also in addition to the carcinogens and all of that, well, if you have any doubt about the human form of mad cow, just look at the behavior of your government, your rulers. And sorry, but not even heating it, not even heating that cow burger to a temperature of Fahrenheit 9/11 will even kill the mad cow prions. So cool that Michael Moore can translate his awareness to a film like that, Fahrenheit 9/11. You think he'd be one to be aware of the vegan connection to peace and saving the world? Perhaps that's our job, to make Michael Moore aware of it. Make Michael Moore aware of it. You know, that this is the key to world peace and saving the world. But no, he's on Howard Stern last week saying how much he enjoys cheeseburgers. Well, in that same week, the United Nations blamed his and everyone else's cheeseburger-eating evil ways as a main cause of desertification. We're turning to desert. The world is turning to dust, with lands the size of Rhode Island becoming desert wasteland every year, and the problem threatening to send millions of people fleeing to greener countries. This in an Associated Press report that came out on June 15th. A third of the Earth's surface is at risk, driving people into cities and destroying agriculture in vast swaths of Africa. 31% of Spain is threatened, while China has lost 36,000 square miles to desert, an area the size of Indiana. That's since the 1950s. And you know, a major cause of turning everything to desert is the slash and burn agriculture that we have. It's eating meat. And we really need to go vegan and save the world. Check it out. In fact, I have an event coming up that I think you're going to enjoy on Saturday, July 31st. Mark your calendar, because you're going to head on over to the Venice United Methodist Church. And that's at the corner of Lincoln and Victoria, which is about a block north? Yeah, block north of Venice Boulevard. And on that day, we are doing the Midsummer Dream for Animals, Children, and Nature. It's a vegan veggie queue that we're going to have out there. A couple of wonderful medical doctors will be speaking. Dr. Richard DeAndrea will be present, and he is well known, gained national attention for bringing vegan food to Watts and helping the African American community. We will also hear from Cynthia Foster, MD, who cured herself of epilepsy by going vegan. You can go to askdrfoster.com for information from her. And the food is going to be great that day also. In fact, we're going to have ourselves some chili cheeseburgers. We're going to talk to Carrie Brown a little bit later in the hour. He's the chef who works with Follow Your Heart and develop chicken-free chicken. He's going to be on a little later in the show. But we will have food from Follow Your Heart, those burgers, and we have Vegetable Delight in Granada Hills making a donation, Vegan Express in L.A. making a donation that day, Vegan Terra in Rancho Palos Verdes. We're getting vegan hamburger and hot dog buns from Vegan Terra. They bake their own, so if you're in a quandary and looking around for vegan hamburger and hot dog buns, you can get them from Vegan Terra in Rancho Palos Verdes. And great speakers that day. We'll have live music. I'll be hosting the event and asking for a $5 or $10 donation at the door to help pay to keep this show on the air. We will have screenings of the new PETA video, Chew on This, and the very moving new full-length documentary, Peaceable Kingdom, from the award-winning producers of The Witness. So lots of cool prize giveaways also. Oh, yeah, vegan earth shoes. That line has just come out. We're going to give some vegan earth shoes away. Earth vegan shoes that day. And they'll also be available for sale. You'll be able to see this exciting new vegan line of shoes. And also, we'll introduce you to Project ACN, where the ACN stands for Animals, Children, Nature. And perhaps this will be your way of generating funds for your progressive organization. So that, again, is Saturday, July 31st, an afternoon event, noon to 5 that day. Looking forward to seeing you there. We need a good turnout for this one, so mark it on your calendar, Saturday, July 31st, noon to 5, at the Venice United Methodist Church, the corner of Victoria and Lincoln Boulevards. Check it out. All the grilling, but none of the killing. And I think you can appreciate that. So we're looking forward to seeing you there. It's, after all, the American thing to do. The American thing to do is go vegan in this day and age. We want to decrease our dependence on foreign oil. Well, it takes 10 calories of fossil fuels burnt to create 1 calorie of your regular meat-eating food. So let us be patriotic this 4th of July. What a wonderful day to make that commitment. Declare your independence from meat today. And what a wonderful day it is today to have the study of vegetarianism in America. And we just happen to have the authors of the book, Vegetarian America, A History. We have Karen Iacobo and Michael Iacobo, who are the authors. We will be talking to them shortly. Let me see here. It's a very thick, like a textbook here. Let me look in the index and see what it says about me here. Let me see.
Oh, new one. I know. You're going to be the hottest controversial vegan talk show host on the face of the planet.
Yes, that's what it says in Vegetarian America, A History. So we will talk that subject. Chef Carrie Brown, who's making history himself, developing chicken-free chicken for Follow Your Heart, and made vegetarian history by introducing vegan foods into the Veterans Administration hospitals and also to UCLA. So all of this coming up on Independence Day, the day you declare your independence from meat. I'm Go Vegan with Bob Linden.
Come on, people. Come on, children. Come on down to the Glory River. Gonna wash you up and down.
I'm always talking about how delicious Veganaise is. No vegan kitchen should be without it. It dresses up even the simplest foods, like my favorite sandwich, avocado, tomato, and Veganaise. Or is it mashed up chickpeas, celery, onions, and Veganaise? Or a tofu burger with Veganaise? Well, I do know I love it on baked or steamed yams. Well, you think you'd read about Veganaise in a cookbook, it winning the American Tasting Institute Award? So I was surprised to see Vegenaise in a book about stroke prevention. Yet there it is, page 194, in Stroke Free for Life by David Webers, MD, Chair, Cerebrovascular Diseases, and Director, Stroke Research Center, Mayo Clinic. And who would know better about a Mayo alternative? Try Vegenaise, now in organic. Available at Follow Your Heart, Canoga Park, California, and natural food stores everywhere. From Millennium Products, the family business that began bottling kombucha in 1995 after it helped their mom survive breast cancer, an invitation for you to enjoy the healing, healthful, detoxifying benefits of kombucha in a variety of flavorful, organic, raw vegan beverages. This handcrafted cultured Chinese elixir brings you essential nutrients like active enzymes, amino acids, antioxidants, vitamins, and... especially attractive to us vegans who often have trouble finding probiotic products without dairy. You get 2 billion non-dairy-based viable probiotics. Start counting them now. Known to strengthen the immune system, stimulate metabolism, detox, and very importantly, alkalize the body. That, you know, the problems associated with an acidic body. Huh? Well, read all about it. You can read about it on the label on GT's Kombucha and Synergy Elixirs, in your fridge at your natural market, or on the website, naturezone.net. Organic, vegan, raw, and refreshing. No sugar, corn syrup, or caffeine. It's never pasteurized. Tasty and tangy. Look for GT's Kombucha in three flavors and Synergy 95% kombucha with a twist of juice, including ginger, cranberry, strawberry, mango, guava, and grape.
A, B, C, D, E, colon, eat that meat and you will die.
Well, then don't eat that meat, and you don't have to. Well, you know, not that long ago, a popular Asian restaurant in the San Diego area closed down, leaving vegans asking, now where do we go for great vegan Chinese food? Well, maybe you don't know about San Diego's best-kept vegan secret. It's the special vegan menu at Mandarin China Restaurant, a San Diego favorite since 1980 at 4110 West Point Loma Boulevard, convenient to the sports arena and OB areas. Check out the special menu at Mandarin China Restaurant. It's 2 pages long. Ask for it if it's not sitting right there on the table there. Right at the top of the page, it says this is a strict vegetarian menu. No animal products are used in any of the dishes or in their preparation. No MSG added. And then you see 3 appetizers, 4 soups, 8 vegan mock chicken dishes, 10 vegan mock beef dishes, and 15 vegetable and noodle dishes. Vegetarian dinner just $7.95 per person at Mandarin China Restaurant. Open till 10 Sunday through Thursday, till 11 Friday and Saturday. Delivery available. You can call 619-222-6688, 619-222-6688 for Mandarin China Restaurant.
Oh no, now you're going to give it to people. Animal burger.
And a little music maestro.
Come on, people. Come on, children, come on down to the Glory River. Gonna wash you up and down. Come on, people, come on, children. There's a king at the Glory River. And the king loved to sing in the sun. Shall overcome. I got fury in my soul. It's gonna take me to the glory of God in my mind. I can't study war no more. Save the people, save the children, save the country.
Okay, that was the music of Laura Nero, who was an animal rights activist, and oh, what a talented performer, musician, singer. She wrote a lot of popular songs, too. I mean, she wrote Stone Soul Picnic and a lot of them like that. But she doesn't want to study war, and today I think we would like to study vegetarianism, you know, I mean, and why not? It looks like we have a really good textbook out now. I've kind of considered myself a student of vegetarianism since I first became one about 33 years ago. And there's a new book out called Vegetarian America, A History. And it's written by Karen Iacobo, who's a journalist and researcher. She's also an adjunct professor of English at Johnson and Wales University in Rhode Island. And Michael Iacobo is a journalist who has worked for the Associated Press and Providence Phoenix and other publications. Welcome, authors of Vegetarian America History. How are you, Karen and Michael?
Hi, Bob.
How are you
today? Doing great. How about you?
Terrific, terrific.
Hi,
Michael. So how did this book come about anyway, a vegetarian history?
Oh, how it came about, Bob, is being vegetarian. So we were interested in our history, and like many people in the country, we didn't know that vegetarian history went was prior to the counterculture of the 1960s and 70s, and especially out where you are in California. So we started looking into books that might mention something about it, and basically what we found were some histories of medicine in the United States, and on occasion would give a little couple of lines here and there, the fact that there was a vegetarian movement as far back as the 19th century. And it seems like every time this movement would be referred to, its leaders would be called fanatics.
Mm-hmm.
And well, we knew that couldn't be true.
Right, of course not. So now, okay. So you dispel the rumor here right away. You say vegetarianism in the United States did not sprout from a '60s California commune, but we could actually go back to the 1700s.
That's right, exactly. In fact, one of America's greatest, Benjamin Franklin, was a vegetarian at least for a time.
Mm-hmm. Right. You say he went vegetarian at age 16 after reading the writings of English author Thomas Tryon.
That's right. And he also believed in it from an ethical point of view. Thomas Tryon wrote about it from medical and ethical aspects.
Mm-hmm. And you also mentioned that there were Native American tribes who were practicing vegetarianism, too?
Well, we're speculating about that. We don't know for sure, but it seems like some of the evidence presented from explorers, if you want to call them explorers of the 17th and early 1800s, that there might have been
mm-hmm.
at least one in the western area that was vegetarian. There's some evidence.
But,
you know, this is an area that another researcher should pick up on.
Oh, you know something? It has been researched, though. I had a guest on, and I'm trying to remember. I'll have to put you in touch with her, but if you just put a search engine in for American Indian and vegetarianism, she traces those roots, and her name escapes me now. She's been on the show. Now, you talk about initially, well, actually, this was called the Pythagoras was involved with vegetarianism, right? So
well, yes, in fact, he was the father of vegetarianism in the Western world, as far as we know.
So the Pythagorean diet is the vegetarian diet.
That's right.
Huh. I wish I remember. What was his principle? Or what was the was he with the triangle? Was he figuring out the size of the triangle? Or
I can answer that. He teaches math sometimes.
He teaches math sometimes. So it must
a theorem. I guess millions and millions of students know him through the Pythagorean theorem.
Right. And I'm trying to remember what it was because I learned it in school. Somehow I remember Archimedes' principle, like displacing the amount of water in a bathtub, but Pythagorean, I should have checked it out on the computer.
Yeah, and many people don't know that he had a community around him. He was considered the father of philosophy as well, and he was an ethical vegetarian as well as, you know, for health.
Mm-hmm.
And he was involved in the higher aspect of human beings. He was involved in the spiritual side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm looking here. You have some great quotes in the book also. Trying to see here. I checked off something here. Let's see. One of the pioneers of the American vegetarian movement, Ernest Crosby in 1900, was talking. He said, Death is natural, I own, and without it, this world would be cursed with life. But when death is made the chief end of life, and life becomes the handmaid of death, and nature is prostituted in the express manufacture of fattened corpses, then death is hideous indeed.
Isn't that the truth?
Yes.
Ernest Crosby started out as a wealthy socialite. His family were industrialists. He was very well connected politically. He could have had a great political career if he'd wanted to, but he walked away from all that when he discovered the writings of Leo Tolstoy, a pacifist and a vegetarian.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually went and visited Tolstoy, and that changed his whole life.
Let's see, there you have the poet Shelley also, who's has very strong pro-vegetarian words.
Oh, absolutely. Shelley opposed all kinds of violence. He was against the class system in England. He thought that human beings should all be considered equal. He was against violence to animals. He was against war. And, of course, he was a vegetarian because of these reasons.
Mm-hmm. Now, I was surprised to find out in your new book, Vegetarian America, A History, I'm a vegan. I thought that this was something fairly new, but I see a reference here in your book. Even on page 3, there were vegans in 1721.
That's right. In fact, we were surprised, too, to discover this, Bob.
Yeah.
Michael and I had a great time in libraries finding this information that was hidden in deteriorating 19th and 18th century volumes that were basically crumbling on the shelves.
Mm-hmm.
We were just fortunate enough, and really we were persevering enough. I'm sorry, my phone dropped. Persevering enough to uncover them, and we really wanted to share them with the world, and especially the vegetarian world, who vegetarians need to know that we have this rich history and that vegetarians have greatly contributed to this country.
We know nothing about our history, you know. I guess whoever wins writes history, right? You know, these days, if you could write a history of Iraq, George Bush could say, you know, freedom and democracy, and others could say, you know, occupation and violence. I've never really seen in one place a real history of vegetarianism. I didn't know I had such a rich history. To go back to 1721, let's see, it was a German immigrant there. What was his name? It was, I think it was Beisel. Is that sound about right, Beisel? He called for a vegan diet for the community, a diet featuring wheat, buckwheat, potatoes, cabbage, greens, fruits, and no meat, milk, cheese, eggs, or honey. He believed that meat eating harmed the soul.
That's right. And in fact, the vegetarian movement, and most people don't even realize that it was a movement as far back as the early 1800s, was started by Christians who believed it was part of their faith to abstain from eating the flesh of animals. They thought that meat eating was not only bad for health, as it was written in the Bible, but that it also tended to corrupt the soul and therefore human society, and it was at the root of all violence.
Mm-hmm. I'm certainly in agreement with that. I think if we were a vegetarian society, there would be a lot less violence. We are what we eat.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, there was an interesting person in your book. Let's see, his name was Metcalf, I believe, William Metcalf?
Yes, William Metcalf, Reverend William Metcalf, came here in 1817 to Philadelphia with a small group of his followers from the Bible Christian Church. There were 40 of them. They had left the Bible Christian Church of England on an unfriendly basis that was established in 1807, and it was a vegetarian church because they believed in pacifism, they believed in the abolition of slavery, they believed in abstaining from liquor, and vegetarianism was a very important part of their faith as Christians. For example, Metcalf wrote, "The commandment, thou shalt not kill, had been misunderstood." He said, quote, "Who has authority or presumption to limit this precept to killing men? May we not reasonably believe that this application was benevolently intended to reach the animal creation?"
Great answer.
They interpret the Bible very differently than most Christians.
Right, right, right. And you dispel one of the other major myths right before that, because he dispelled the myth of Jesus serving fish. People always say that to me. Well, Jesus, he ate fish. He served fish, you know?
Yes, and in fact, they believe that what Jesus fed the 5,000 was actually some food that was delicious and served with bread, but it was not fish, that the word fish in the original language had been misinterpreted over the years, biblical translation.
Right. You say, Metcalf preached that this conventional belief that Jesus fed fish to the people and ate it himself was based on a misunderstanding of the Bible. The term fisherman during the era when the Gospels were written, Metcalf explained, was applied to many occupations ranging from fishers of pearls, coral, and marine plants, also including those who hunted fish. So Metcalf explained that the word for fish used in the Gospels, did not translate as an aquatic animal, but meant some other non-animal food that was served with bread. Well, that is a major myth to dispel. You always hear that from people.
Well, that's That's true. And within the Gospels, Jesus said that he had come to make the apostles fishers of men. He had basically come to take them away from fishing for fish, but to make them fishers of men,
mm-hmm.
to take their soul and lead it into the right direction.
Makes more sense to me that way.
It does. When you think of it, if Jesus was to bring us peace and love and be the ultimate in love, why would he be for fishing?
What would Jesus eat, right? You know,
I mean... You wouldn't see him eat a cheeseburger.
You wouldn't see him eat a cheeseburger. No. And you wouldn't see him above the slaughterhouse floor smiling down on the food preparation, you know?
Right. And Sylvester Graham, the early 19th century, in fact, the greatest advocate of vegetarianism, we've dubbed him the father of American vegetarianism.
I noticed that. I've never heard of Sylvester Graham.
Well, most people haven't, including most vegetarians, and frankly, we hadn't heard of him until we did our research. And Mr. Graham had written and said in lectures, "For according to Moses, the Lord God planted a garden and caused every tree that is pleasant to the sight and good for food to grow out of the ground, and he took the man whom he had formed and put him into the Garden of Eden to dress it and keep it and subsist on its fruits. Such, then, is the food which has been adapted to the highest and best conditions of human nature." So these early vegetarians, including Mr. Graham, believed if you violated this law, eventually you would contract some disease and probably die an untimely death.
And don't we know that today? Name the disease, there's the connection to it, isn't there, just about?
That's so right. In fact, it was Sylvester Graham who went around lecturing up and down the eastern seaboard, telling people that if they wanted to prevent disease, especially cholera epidemics that had struck this country in 1829 and 1830, and killed so many people that the daily newspapers were reporting the number of deaths every day. And in fact, in 1830, Congress had called for a national day of prayer and fasting because they believed that sickness was arbitrarily handed out to God by God or handed out as punishment. And Mr. Graham came along with the radical idea that sickness was related to health habits, including eating meat made you sick, and he told people they needed to bathe, that they needed to exercise, they needed to get fresh air, they needed to stop wearing corsets that women were wearing that made them practically not able to breathe. And this was considered radical information at the time, and today it's common advice, but no one knows it was vegetarians who brought this idea to our country.
Right, right. I was interested in finding out, you know, I've been to many Seventh-day Adventist health food stores and never really thought about, its origins, but you talk about Ellen G. White, the founder of the Seventh-day Adventists.
Yes, she was a very interesting character. I guess about 1865, well, just say 1860s, she founded Adventist Church. And she always preached vegetarianism, and she was inconsistent in her personal life, but however, later in life, she became a total vegetarian. But anyway, one of her understudies was John Harvey Kellogg, which some people call the father of the breakfast cereal industry.
Yes, John Harvey Kellogg.
Yes,
he
was perhaps next to Graham, he was probably the greatest advocate of vegetarianism that the U.S. has seen.
Okay. Could you talk up a little, please, Michael, into the telephone?
Okay, sure.
Oh, much better. Oh, Karen, then you too, if it comes in that clearly. Oh, I should have said that. Okay.
For about 60 years, he published a magazine called Good Health, and it was basically a vegetarian hygienic type of magazine. And of course he ran the Battle Creek Sanitarium, and it drew an unbelievable crowd of people who were, you know, who's the head of Firestone Tire, who's like a who's who in industry, like Ford, Henry Ford, a whole bunch of people.
Yeah, and we know the name Kellogg and Battle Creek, Battle Creek, Michigan, right there, huh?
That's right. In fact, Dr. Kellogg was a renowned surgeon during his time. He's been portrayed otherwise in contemporary times, but he was world-renowned. He had invented some surgical procedures, and he, Michael, what were some of the inventions there?
Okay, people credit him with inventing the electric blanket, the asthma device, where you inhale, I guess it's called an inhaler, exercise equipment, and also also, like Karen said, several varieties of stitches.
And he, like other advocates of vegetarianism before him who were in the medical field, advocated holistic health. He was not, even though he was a surgeon, he tended to not want to prescribe drugs. He prescribed diet. And this is how he developed some vegetarian foods for the folks who stayed at the sanitarium. He wanted it to be convenient for them when they went home that they would have something to eat. So he started a mail order food business. And in fact, his Battle Creek Sanitarium was like a swanky hotel combined with an upscale health spa combined with a hospital.
Mm-hmm. I see.
Yeah, the world has never seen anything like it since.
Right. Well, we're working on it now. He developed Protos, right? Was that what it was called? Protos? Protos?
Yes.
It's in 1899, you say in the book here, he invented Protos to imitate the taste of chicken or beef. It was sold at a New York City vegetarian restaurant in 1901 for 15 cents a serving.
Correct.
And, you know, a little later in the hour, I have Carrie Brown on, who's a chef, works with Follow Your Heart here. He developed chicken-free chicken. So I think in the sequel book, we may have some information to get into your next history book. You know?
In fact, Bob, there will be a sequel to this, and you're in that book, because our book ends in 2003. And being here on the East Coast, which we don't always get the news from California, we found out about you too late to be in the first book, but we are putting you in the second book, and we want to interview you, so perhaps we can set that up later.
I'm shocked, but I'm in a history book, yeah.
You know, in the East Coast, we always find out about California a little later.
Yeah, just a couple of years, usually.
That's true.
Well, we're working on it, so... Oh, you know, I
love the East Coast.
I really did like the quotes you had in here, though, from Ellen White of the Adventist founder. You know what you say in here? Well, you quote her. She says, "God gave our first parents the food. He designed that the race should eat." God gave him the food. He designed it. It was contrary to his plan to have the life of any creature taken. There was to be no death in Eden. The fruit of the trees in the garden was the food man food man's wants required. She wrote, and they had physicians, and she said, well, to a physician who uses and prescribes meat, that leads the patient, by his own example, to indulge in a perverted appetite. And, so it really says it all. I mean, there's a lot of great material in here. We have another probably 2 or 3 minutes here, and, you know, we hardly have gotten out of the 1700s and 1800s yet,
It is a very long, rich history. In fact, vegetarians were heavily involved in the peace movement. They were in the feminist movement, the environmental movement, and I'm talking about in the 19th century as well as the 20th and the 21st. But it's not true that all vegetarians think alike, because there have also been some great vegetarian advocates who have been industrialists, who have been, for example...
Bernard McFadden, who at the time, in the 1920s, he rivaled Hearst as far as circulation.
In magazines. He was a publishing magnate.
Oh, yeah?
And he was a great advocate of not vaccinating your children, and he was a great anti-vivisectionist as well as an advocate of vegetarianism, and he tangled with the AMA. But it's very interesting that the fourth president of the AMA was a great advocate of vegetarianism, Dr. Reuben Diamond Mussey.
Mm-hmm. Well, unless you're bought and sold by industry these days, can you not be an advocate of vegetarianism? Yeah,
you know, it's odd how things come around full circle, because now recently the AMA has come forward saying something not unkind about vegetarianism. They're not actually advocating of it. They're saying it has its merits. And as the vegetarian movement in 1817 began with Christians, now there are Christian vegetarian associations in the 21st century.
Sure.
So the vegetarian movement has not had a linear progression. It's sort of gone up and down like waves or like a roller coaster. And we've even had a golden age of vegetarianism before the one we're in. Like, for example, early in the 20th century, we call the golden age, because we were seeing newspaper and magazine headlines, "Will America Go Vegetarian?" in 1910.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's taking us so long?
This is a good question. Dr. Hardinge, who was a great Seventh-day Adventist and also a Harvard-trained medical researcher, who was one of the first people, in fact, the first, to connect the vegetarian diet with preventing many diseases, he has said that you have to have a deeper reason for becoming a vegetarian to stick with it. In other words, if you're doing it to prevent mad cow disease today, or if you're doing it to lose weight, that's not going to st- stay with you if some other trend comes around tomorrow. But if you're doing it from a deeper reason, like a spiritual reason, you're likely to remain a vegetarian.
Right.
He said if you do it out of fear, like of bad health, it would disappear as soon as the fear evaporates. You would revert back to your meat eating.
I find that to be the case.
Like a spiritual.
Yeah, most ethical vegans are the ones who stay vegan. I can never, I'm always surprised when somebody says, "Oh, I used to be vegan or used to be vegetarian." How do you go back once you're enlightened, you know? So I really recommend the book. We're just about out of time here. It's Vegetarian America, A History. It's Karen Iacobo and Michael Iacobo. And it goes, I'm just saying, it goes from the 1700s, but it also comes forward to the 60s and 70s where you read about Gypsy Boots on the Steve Allen Show. You read about the farm in Tennessee. You read about the North American Vegetarian Society. PETA and Ingrid Newkirk and John Robbins and Neil Barnard and Howard Lyman. They're all in there. I don't know who's going to be in the next one. Oh, I'm going to be in the next one.
Well,
that's right. Yeah.
Some of this information, including some graphics that we really want to share with vegetarians in the world, are on our website, if we may be so bold as to mention it.
Oh, please do. Please, this is your show.
Thank you. The website just went up, so it's under construction, but it is www.vegetarianmuseum.com. That's Vegetarian Museum. We have a museum because we want vegetarians to know our rich history and to be proud of being vegetarians.
I was just at a potluck a few weeks ago, and we were sitting around saying, we need to have a vegetarian museum in Los Angeles. And now, are you stalking us? Are you?
No, synchronicity, great minds think alike, right?
Oh, that's great. So is this a physical museum, or are you saying a museum that's on the website, or creating a web museum? Is that?
At this point, it's a virtual museum, the first museum dedicated to vegetarianism, and we're going to have articles about what's happening in the vegetarian world now and many links, and we'll have graphics that will be, I think, fascinating to people with an interest either in American history or vegetarianism, because you will see, for example, an elaborate 19th century vegetarian restaurant menu. You will see the covers of vegetarian magazines from the 19th and early 20th century. Plus, as time goes by, we are going to be uploading text from some of these magazines and from vegetarian books of the early eras to let people know that we did exist then and we're still here now.
Well, it sounds like you're creating a great course study, and at some point there should be vegetarian studies in our colleges and universities.
Absolutely. Vegetarianism is a movement. It's a great movement. Just like civil rights or the environmental movement, we are a movement. Right now, the animal rights movement tend to be the leaders in promoting vegetarianism through their heavy media exposure, and this is wonderful. But there still is a vegetarian movement, and in fact, the animal rights movement goes back to the early 1800s when the vegetarians were the movement who were also advocating for the liberation of animals as well as for the eating of vegetable foods for health.
Well, that's what we're about here. You know, to me, vegan means for animal liberation and for a totally vegetarian lifestyle. So, oh, well, thanks so much for being on here. And oh, that website again, it was vegetarianmuseum.com. Was that
yes.
Correct? Okay. Well, terrific. Thank you so much, Michael and Karen. And it's a great book, and I recommend it to everyone.
May we also give an address for those who are not on the internet?
Yes, you may.
You can write to us at Vegetarian America, 409 Pine Street, like the tree, 409 Pine Street, Providence, Rhode Island, and it's 02903. 02903.
Excellent. Well, I love this book, but I have a feeling I might like the next book even more.
We've heard a lot of good things about you, Bob, but we heard about him too late, but so just in time for the next book, though.
Oh, good. I don't know. Oh, I was going to say I deny everything, but you said there were good things. Okay, fine. Okay, well, thanks so much for being here. We'll talk to you in a bit then. Thanks,
awesome.
Michael
thank
and Karen.
You,
thank you, Bob.
Okay, sure.
Bye.
Okay, this is Go Vegan with Bob Linden. A little music in the background here. Oh, next week's show, an interesting show. We have Rin Berry next week. You know, we dispel the myth of Jesus eating fish today. Next week, we dispel the myth of Hitler being a vegetarian. Not so. He has a book, Hitler, neither vegetarian nor animal lover. So make sure you're listening to Go Vegan with Bob Linden next week. Actually, if you'd like the show to be on next week, maybe you'd like to make a tax-deductible donation, and you're certainly welcome to do that. You can send it to P.O. Box 220025, Newhall, California, 91322. P.O. Box 220025, Newhall, California, 91322. KPFK brought in over $1 million last week. I brought in $100, so I only have $999,900 to catch up to KPFK. KPFK doesn't have a vegetarian, vegan, animal rights program on at the moment. An update on the fate of the La Jolla seals will be their fate will be decided by the full San Diego City Council before the end of the year. The Natural Resources Committee was unable to come to a decision at that meeting, so it's been passed to the full San Diego City Council. All of this about mad cow, there's a report that came out a few days ago. The headline, up to 100 more mad cow cases expected, this from United Press International, says the U.S. Department of Agriculture reported Wednesday a cow that initially tested positive for mad cow disease has come back negative on the follow-up testing. But a food industry consultant told United Press International he estimates there could be more than 100 cases of the deadly disorder in the country's herds. About half of the cases will go undetected and passed on for human consumption. Remember, one bite of an infected burger or steak can be fatal. If you get mad cow disease, it is 100% fatal in the human form. And Robert Labud, president of Least Cost Formulation Limited, a food industry consultancy in Virginia, was making that prediction about more cases of mad cow happening. So, keep your eyes open for vegan foods. And shut your eyes to the meat, would you? So there's a problem with dogs in Tijuana. If you think they have it bad in Southern California, situation is really bad for dogs in Tijuana. And I have the commission statement here from stnicholashope.org, stnicholashope.org, dedicated to creating a world where our relationship with animals is guided by compassion. And they are attempting to have some land donated to them, and they want to have a sanctuary for the dogs in Tijuana. So might I suggest that you please visit that website, stnicholashope.org, stnicholashope.org, stnicholashope.org. Let's see what else we got going here. I told you last week that the state of California is suing the major tuna makers on product warning related to mercury. But I did want to talk to you. I did promise to get to this. I don't know. Don't cry over spilled milk. If you do spill that milk, maybe you want to put it in the gas tank of your car, for all I know, or in your jet, because the report is rocket fuel was found in California milk. From the San Francisco Chronicle on June 22nd, a toxic chemical in rocket fuel has been detected in California's milk supply. Although environmentalists and toxicologists disagree over whether the levels are high enough to pose a health threat to infants and young children, tests by the California Department of Food and Agriculture found perchlorate, a rocket fuel component widely used by the defense industry, in 32 samples of milk taken from Alameda, San Joaquin, and Sacramento counties, according to a report that was released. The Environmental Working Group analyzed 32 samples of milk from stores in Los Angeles and Orange counties and found that 31 of the 32 samples contained minute amounts of this perchlorate, this rocket fuel there, which contaminates groundwater in parts of the state and has been linked to thyroid problems in humans. So, how do you get your protein? How do you get your rocket fuel, huh? Oh, there's something going on I want to get to here. Oh, gosh, am I running out of time already? This is the fastest hour. I lose all concept of time. It says here I got an alert from the Organic Consumer Association, and it talks about they want you to help keep California free of genetically engineered crops. So what they're doing is forming regional organizers in communities. You become a regional organizer with Californians for GE-free agriculture by attending a 5-day training session August 2nd through the 6th. This is following up the Mendocino County legislation that has banned growing genetically altered crops and animals there. So there's a training session August 2nd through the 6th in Sonoma County, and you're going to want to check into it and perhaps attend. So I might give you a phone number here. May I do that? And give you an email address. You can go to calgefree.org. calgefree.org. You can send an email to info@calgefree.org. info@calgefree.org, or you can call 415-561-2523. 415-561-2523. Okay, I suppose that that should do it for Animal News and Views, which is sponsored by In Defense of Animals. And I want you to know that In Defense of Animals is... has a major campaign going on that just started. The Ultimate Challenge in Defense of Animals, coined by Eric Haar, a nationally syndicated columnist, author, and world-class triathlete. The Ultimate Challenge in Defense of Animals is Eric's unprecedented athletic quest to raise awareness and funds for animals. Eric's personal challenge to finish as a top leader in 10 of the world's most strenuous sporting events, including the Ironman National Championships, the Alcatraz Invitational Swim, and the Hawaiian Ironman World Championships. Eric's goal? To raise $2 million for In Defense of Animals and animals in need of the funds. Desperately in need of the funds. Elliot Katz of In Defense of Animals said, "I am deeply honored that Eric has chosen IDA to be the recipient of his energy and drive. His relentless enthusiasm and determination is infectious. He is a man who strives to do his very best as an athlete, husband, father, businessman, and animal guardian. I know that Eric's passion and commitment to make a difference in the lives of animals will inspire you to do all you can to help us end the many tragedies that befall so many millions of animals." You can go to IDAUSA.org for more information on the Ultimate Challenge. I think you'll be quite interested. If you're an athlete, get involved. Even if you're a weekend athlete, you don't even have to be an athlete to get involved and be part of Team IDA. So check it out. Please do that. And we will continue coming up on Go Vegan with Bob Linden. Oh, we're going to be talking to Carrie Brown at Follow Your Heart. And Vijay has visited. He's got something to say. So we will continue on Go Vegan with Bob Linden.
Going vegan just got easier. Presenting Follow Your Heart Chicken Free Chicken. Now at natural food stores everywhere. All the taste, none of the bird. Vegan, low fat, low sodium, cholesterol free chicken from Follow Your Heart. 11 grams of protein per 2.5 ounce serving. Ready to serve, delicious hot or cold, like on a sandwich with new organic veggies. You are what you eat. Don't be chicken. Try Chicken Free Chicken. Get some at Follow Your Heart on Sherman Way, a block and a half east of Topanga, Canoga Park, and natural food stores everywhere.
Oh, and I'm expecting Bill Dyer of In Defense of Animals to be coming out to our great event that we are happening. That's happening July 31st, noon to 5, Venice United Methodist Church on Lincoln at Victoria, just a block north of Venice Boulevard there. And at this wonderful event, for the first time, you will be able to see Earth Vegan Shoes, Earth Vegan Footwear. You'll check it out, made of soft, breathable, simulated leather uppers and linings, adjustable hook and loop straps at the forefoot and ankle, and a giving elasticized heel band. It's hand-sewn, hand-sewn cobbler's construction with multi-density cushioned footbed, natural latex rubber sole, and calso negative heel technology. You remember the old Earth shoes designed with yoga in mind? Well, they still are. They're out, the Earth Vegan Footwear line. You can see the footwear at our fabulous event that's happening July 31st, noon to 5 in Venice. You can also go to earthvegan.us, so it's like one word, earthvegan.us. The phone number, 877-746-3364. We will be giving away pairs of Earth Vegan shoes at our event. You'll also have the opportunity to buy them, and they are UK Vegan Society certified for the components and construction. Many styles of vegan casuals for men and women. Check it out July 31st at our wonderful event happening in Venice.
Mad cow, bird flu. Which one is killing you?
Well, hopefully none of them, because you're a vegan and, you know, you still can enjoy all the tastes and textures of perhaps if you've been a meat eater, foods you've gotten used to. But I'll tell you, over the centuries, the Buddhist monks have perfected the art of vegetarian cooking and the replication of the textures and flavors of meat. So you sacrifice nothing. You sacrifice no one. Head on over to Vegetable Delight Chinese Restaurant, 17823 Chatsworth Street, Granada Hills, 818-360-3997. Weekday lunch specials, 150 menu items. Book your special events and parties, your group outings, especially on weekends, especially welcome on Sundays. That's Vegetable Delight, 818-360-3997, 17823 Chatsworth Street. Well, we are quickly running out of time on Go Vegan with Bob Linden. I'd like to introduce Carrie Brown. Carrie Brown is the chef extraordinaire who often works with Follow Your Heart Restaurant in Canoga Park, California. You just heard the commercial for chicken-free chicken.
Thank you, Bob.
That's Carrie's. That's your invention, Carrie. And that might qualify getting you in the next vegetarian history book.
Wow.
Yeah, man. Carrie has been involved with the entertainment industry for years, but gosh, can you cook?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Hey,
yeah.
I got a quick recipe for barbecue chicken for the 4th.
Sure, let's hear it.
You take chicken-free chicken,
mm-hmm.
take a cup of your favorite barbecue sauce, and 1 tablespoon of olive oil, or canola oil, the oil you prefer. I prefer olive, though. Mix the two together, heat the oil and the barbecue sauce together in a small pan. Drop the chicken-free chicken in it and heat it for about 4 minutes. And then you can either place it on your barbecue and barbecue it off if you'd like to, or serve it just the way it is. It is incredible.
Ah, mm-hmm.
What we're going to serve.
You have something in common with Mr. Kellogg, whom we discussed.
Kellogg.
Right, Mr. Kellogg.
And his cornflakes.
Right, and his cornflakes, but he introduced the chicken substitute in 1899 that was served in New York like that. And here you are, Carrie. And you've also introduced vegan food into the Veterans Administration hospitals and to UCLA.
We're very proud of that. We've been feeding VA hospitals since about 1999, I guess. And we feed hundreds of people a day now at VA hospitals on Wilshire Boulevard and in Long Beach, the VA hospital in Long Beach. We are also serving our vegan foods at UCLA,
mm-hmm.
the Student Union, and now, at some other restaurants around Canyon.
At the VA hospital, you have the vegan pizzas available every day with vegan gourmet cheese melted on it.
Actually, sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. It depends on how busy they are that day, but you can certainly call ahead of time and find out if it is. The public is always welcome at these, and it's nice to see fresh faces at many of these hospitals. These guys have been in many wars, and they've suffered a whole lot, and some have become tremendous heroes to me because they've served us, meaning myself and our country and you and everybody else so well, and they've paid such a high price, and they still have their humor, they still have their strength, and they still have their joy.
Yes.
And it's kind of nuts.
We have about a minute left. You're cooking on Wednesdays in July. When are you going to be there? When we can come in for some specials?
Well, I'll be there July 7th to 21st.
July 7th and 21st. That Follow Your Heart.
Follow Your Heart.
Yes.
Right? We're going to do a Japanese dinner on the 7th, which is kind of fun. We did it last year and it was a huge success. Then the 21st, we're going to do what we call the magic meal, which is vegan dishes that J.R. Rowling, who wrote Harry Potter, might enjoy. And this is all fantasy kind of food. They're all vegan, of course, and they include things like chicken-free chicken fingers and dark forest salad with biting fish fins, owl notes, and just fun, enjoyable time. All vegan, all low-fat, zero, you know, all the good stuff.
Okay. But, so you're cooking at Follow Your Heart July 7th and the 21st.
And on the 14th and 28th, they're going to have two other guest chefs, Rashid on the 14th, and Joyce Cook Knight, who wrote the Follow Your Heart cookbook, on the 28th.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Carrie, and we'll be enjoying the chili cheeseburgers on the 31st. Thanks for joining us on Go Vegan with Bob Linden.